For March the 4th, 2016, we talk about Superhot, Infinicine, and we ask you if you've ever taken a break from gaming. Welcome to Level 134. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Jella Prendes.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Thank you so much for being patient with our week off. It was a last minute scheduling snafu, but it was cool to have my first night off in a week, or sorry, yeah, in a long time. And so I used that time to do some accounting.
Okay. I ended up doing the same thing, so
you gotta slow down. This life in the fast lane is gonna kill you.
That's what a lot of people are telling me.
They're gonna make the next American Psycho movie about you, Cole.
I was like, oh, I've got all this time now, I can get ahead on my books. More accurately, I can catch up on my books. But yeah, no, anything to avoid the Dark Souls 3 spoilers. The press embargo lifted today, and the internet is a fucking nightmare.
Yeah. I already saw that Allison spoiled some stuff for herself too, yeah. So she was pretty sad. So
yeah, I'm not down.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the worry isn't so much that somebody's going to like directly inflict that as violence on me, or you know, on our community. It's more like, oh my gosh, did you see that so-and-so, and they're like, I don't want to know that.
Mm-hmm. I like being surprised.
Yeah. I need to like
the one place in my life I like being surprised.
Well, I need to preserve that sense of wonder and awe in my voice as I speak about these things for the first time.
Well, you need those fresh eyes so that you can chug it in like a day and a half.
Oh, right. Yeah. No. I need to go in unsullied and then just immediately ruin the game for me. For myself. Yeah. Oh, well. Does anybody have any anecdotes they want to hit us with?
I'm kind of tempted to just do fake Dark Souls 3 spoilers now throughout the podcast.
See, that's
didn't
fun.
We already try to do that last time anyway, like predictions or something?
We did try and do the predictions, and then there was also the spoiler cast that Dennis did with Murph that is still really funny. The one for Dark Souls 2.
I still maintain that is one of the most interesting game mechanics ever that mm-hmm. needs to exist somewhere, where you have a stat that as it goes up or down puts you in different builds of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you can reduce the game back far enough, you get certain glitches added back in that then open up other stuff and et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, that'd be a good way to handle like Bloodborne 2 with insight. Like the higher your insight goes, it goes full magic circle.
Yes.
Nice. Oh, well, why don't we just get started then? Let's see here. We've got the usual kind of show for you, the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind. And we're going to start with
the brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. Does anybody have a story that they want to volunteer first?
Ooh, pick me.
Jolly,
pick me.
Go.
Okay, so this is actually kind of related to stuff you were doing recently, Cole, because you were streaming stuff.
Yes.
So I ended up finding a story that's about streaming. So there is a startup called Infinicine, and they are opening up their beta to like a broader audience. They were in closed beta until now for their cloud-based streaming studio. So that's a thing that's going to be dropping sometime before the end of the year. And the whole point of it being cloud-based is, of course, that it would take less of your computer's resources to run because it's in the cloud and it's not on your computer trying to suck your computer's life out of it while you're trying to, you know, get the game to go. So they're also working on apps for Xbox One and PS4 so that the gamers that are using the service won't have to buy extra hardware in order to stream. So this is something that will kind of like
kind of don't already, you kind of already don't have to buy extra hardware to stream on either of those, right?
Yeah, well, they I both suppose, have Twitch apps.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I suppose they're just trying to like do stuff to work around having to use as many resources on whatever platform that they're on, you know.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. I don't know what else they're going to be doing. I'm sure they're going to do some more stuff to make it not just cloud-based, but make it even more accessible for console gamers versus, you know, the Twitch app or what have you.
Well,
so,
I'm really happy that it's built for real people, so I know that I am not a real person in these people's eyes, so that's good.
Well, they're just more or less just trying to make it easier to stream and to stream seamlessly without having to, you know, fiddle with every setting on the planet to get it to work right.
Yeah, well, it's like push button.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like it definitely looks like an online cloud-based browser version of like OBS.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
OBS
is, you know, I love it now that I've gotten it to a place where I don't really have to mess with the settings, but
yeah,
it was some arcane magic when I first set it up.
Yeah. There's definitely, especially with audio, like there's no really good solution that doesn't involve Soundflower on the Mac.
No, not at all. And now, like, with the new El Capitan update, even that doesn't really work.
Yeah.
It's where, like, you can install it, but it doesn't show up where it used to show up, but you can still create it as an audio device, and but then you can't adjust volume, so you kind of have to get all the volume set up the way you want it before you turn on. Like, it's just, it's whack.
Yeah. So would you say it's Wiggity Rack?
Wiggity Rack, yes.
Oh, sorry. Damn it, I was trying to do a Team Troll Squad thing, but I misspoke. Fuck. No,
that's
like
okay. Potential title. Okay.
Sorry, not everyone has enough groove to say that correctly.
Yes, I am distinctly lacking in groove. No, but this could be interesting. Like, I guess what it's doing is just like grabbing the frame buffer and then sending that out, as opposed to doing like transcoding on the machine itself and just offloading all of the transcoding onto the streaming machine. So if it's just getting video and the frame buffer and the audio stream, it doesn't matter. It would introduce just a little bit more lag. But it would still stay in sync if they did all of that on one machine on the other side.
Yeah, so introduce a little bit of lag to the stream, not to the person playing.
Right. So lag to the stream as opposed to lag between what you're doing and this is pretty cool. Mm-hmm. How'd you find out about this, Jala?
I looked on the internet. I wasn't looking for a specific thing. It's just how do you find anything on the internet? You just around.
I'm just curious.
Or things just kind of crop up. I don't know.
Some kind of place or source or like some kind of engine for inquiries or
no, literally the way that I search for stories is I do not go to any of the gaming sites. I just plug into Google video game news and I look through whatever news comes up. Game news, and that's why I get such a variety. It's not just release dates, because I'm finding shit from all over the place. This was like, you know, like the URL I found this at was like builtinchicago.org, because it's a Chicago-based startup. So, I mean, you know, like I just found it, and the title looked interesting, so I clicked on it, and I said, hey, streaming, that's a thing that a lot of the listeners do, and also Cole has been doing, and Dennis has been doing, and I tried it once, but I'm on Wi-Fi DSL, so, like, I'm never going to get it to work right on my current settings, so...
Yeah, no, I just fire up Siri and say, show me the best thing you got.
Impress me.
Huh. Well, yeah, this is a good find, Jala.
Yep.
Yeah. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, so my story is for all Uncharted lovers out there. And it should, I think, hit with this episode going live for everyone in time for people to take advantage of it, which is the multiplayer for Uncharted 4 A Thief's End is going to be available in beta form to everyone with a PS4 this weekend. So
even if they don't have PlayStation Plus?
Ooh, does not say on that one. I'm going to guess you have to have PlayStation Plus, although I don't know, like, it's beta. I don't know if they're thinking about that case, so maybe worth a shot. Let us know, Ben. they did a test before, but it was only for people who owned the complete Nathan Drake collection or whatever that's called with Uncharted 1 and 2. And now everyone can have it, whether or not they've owned a previous game. Yeah, so exciting stuff. Damn it, now I can't move forward without acknowledging that 3 exists. Oh, I backed myself into a corner. Damn it. Okay, fine. The multiplayer on 3 was very refreshingly different from most multiplayer out there. Just in how conducive it was to movement and hand-to-hand combat while still having a lot of weapons focus. So I kind of feel like Uncharted 3's multiplayer was kind of what Brink wanted to be.
Mm-hmm.
Only like third person and a lot more fun. So I had a lot of fun playing Uncharted 3 multiplayer.
People so know, I, man. I'd don't
be interested to try Uncharted 4's.
Huh.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, sign up for that if you can.
I mean, there were a couple of good parts of Uncharted 3, but yeah.
The only part I remember of it, and maybe this is just because I only played the beginning, is the fight in the kitchen where you bash that guy's head into a fridge for a little bit.
Yep. Or hit a guy with a fish.
Yep.
That was good.
Can you beat people up with pool balls too?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. I feel like that section kind of made a promise that the rest of the game didn't quite deliver on.
It was pretty obviously like designed for a vertical slice, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think probably the best part about that that scene was the article that tied it into The Last of Us. So there's like a newspaper clipping on the
about the cordyceps. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Ben, your story and mine are going to be pretty linked up. Sorry, I didn't put mine into the robot there, but we can kind of tag team this because last week there was a Pokemon announcement, and who is the MC?
Drew Barrymore.
Go for
I just wanted to share the story because I did not understand it at all.
Charlie's Angel herself.
Mm-hmm. Drew Barrymore is a Pokemon.
one of those gross ones, like Mr. Mime. That's just a person.
She doesn't evolve.
Well, no, because she's already achieved perfection.
Aw, way to bring it back. Nice, cool.
I mean, far be it for me to say something mean about a famous person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Continue and give more details because I don't understand either.
So the way the article's phrased is they call it a private Pokemon soiree that's going to happen in L.A. And apparently there's going to be like pop-up Pokemon shops in L.A. for this month to celebrate the 20th anniversary. And then there's going to be tie-ins to other stores like Toys R Us or GameStop.
Yeah.
Yeah. they said that Pikachu will be attending the private soiree.
Oh, holy shit, they got him? He's been a recluse for years.
I know. I heard he was like Bill Murray, where you have to call an 1-800 number to get a hold of him.
It's just a phone that intermittently rings and he decides whether or not to pick it up.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't have caller ID, and that's the interesting part.
Right, right. He's not screening you. He just decides whether or not that's the call he's going to take.
He's screening for whether or not he feels like interacting with another human. Beyond that, he doesn't care.
I'm pretty
he just
sure
said Pikachu's a human.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that is just a recording on the other side, because how many different permutations of Pikachu can he actually say?
Oh, should we start now? Because we're going to be here for a while.
Yeah.
There's a lot of emotion, as the animes have shown us.
Someone gets paid millions of dollars to do Pika different ways.
Yeah, I think they just got him once and then they pitch shifted it. It's like how they recorded Roadrunner.
Someone refers to Pika and Chew as their craft, all right?
Oh, man. But that is not the only. So that's coming up to celebrate the anniversary. The stories that I have here are about new Pokemon games, including an announcement that Pokemon Sun and Moon are coming out this year. No real details about them other than it's Sun and Moon. They keep on defying my expectation that there are no more pairs. Like, I thought that they would run out, like, okay, like Ruby and Sapphire. That's pretty good. It's kind of blue and yellow or blue and red, but okay, I'll allow it. But then they just kept going. Diamond and Pearl, it's a bit of a tenuous link. I think that if you put Pokemon before two different words, they will immediately be linked up. Pokemon is it's a covalent bond. I about said a covalent mon, but
did you guys try Pokemon router and Pokemon modem? It was
oh, that's like the Pokemon version of they reskin Mega Man Network Battle, right?
Yeah. Why has there been not Pokemon Yin and Pokemon Yang?
Right.
I don't know. Huh.
So how many Pokemon are they up to now?
Oh, in terms of numbers, it has to be like 800, something like that.
Okay.
Yo, it's funny. Oh, I have no reference for the Pokemon universe, but I thought 800 too. Like, I don't know.
Last count I actually saw was like 350. I don't know how many there actually are, though.
Oh, there was like 351 in the original group, right?
Oh, no, really? 151.
Yeah,
well, it was 150, I thought.
Yeah, 151.
Yeah, 151. Yeah. So I think after Gold and Silver, they had about 300, but each one of them added 100 to 150. Right now, we're looking at 722. Let's just say tricky, because they keep on adding new ones as promotional things. So just
table of elements.
Well, there is this site or Tumblr or something like that where it's like drawing Pokemon from memory, and it's really funny because like the crap that comes out the other side is bad.
That's one of my favorite things to do, is have somebody draw Homer Simpson from memory. Like, I'll just hand him an index card and ask him to do that because it's funny. There's also like Tumblrs, or at least on Google image search, usually within the first page of results, you'll see pictures of Pokemon with Nicolas Cage faces.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's great. I love a list of monsters.
Was that when they did the tie-in with Con Air for Pokemon?
Yeah, it was Mon Air.
Yeah.
Thank you. Alley-oop. But yeah. In addition to that, because of this anniversary, they are re-releasing Red, Blue, and Yellow on the virtual console. Those are all of them are going to be compatible with the Pokemon Bank.
Nice.
So you can
What's the Pokemon Bank?
That's the cloud storage for your Pokemon, so you don't have to have like two DSs or two different machines to trade and get all the Pokemon in one place.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah.
Also known as a way to get $5 a month out of parents. Mon Air.
Patting yourself on the back, are we?
No. That was a team effort.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and you respond, or we ask the nice people a question. Let's see here. Dennis, what is the question that you asked them?
Yeah, this question was not Lent inspired, but I'm going to like retrofit it and say that it was, which is, have you ever given up on games for a time, either related to time or money or just losing interest? And if so, what brought you back?
This is a really good question. My usual joke is to say that I gave up sacrifice for Lent, but that is that's a little bit. It's a kind of daddy. It's a little daddy.
I approve.
But I'll pick us up here with Ollie, who says, I did. I left gaming behind for a while, from about 2004 to 2008. Not that I really grew out of it, but more that I had spent so much time on it and I wanted to try other things. But the game that got me back in was Arkham Asylum. I saw it at a friend's house, and I couldn't get over how it looked, how the story developed, and I knew that I had to have it. It was everything I wanted from a game, and it showed me how far the medium had come.
That's a high note to come back in on.
Yeah, Arkham Asylum is great.
Mm-hmm.
That really might be my favorite of those games in the grand analysis.
That's not a bad choice. Yeah.
Let's see here. Jala, what does Steven say?
Steven says, I did, for about 7 hours last night. It was the worst.
That's a popular comment.
it was so bad that he went unconscious while he was without them.
Yeah, well, you
right?
know. Dreams is like games. Dreams is games that you design throughout the day without realizing it.
It's true.
Then depending upon if you have control over your dreams, lucid dreaming and stuff, you might be in control of that too.
But sometimes who's in charge of QA?
But sometimes you have dreams about games, and that is disappointing. Like, oh gosh, Tetris dreams. Tetris stress dreams, the worst.
Oh gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dr. Mario dreams.
What was that, Jala?
There was this drawing somebody had posted on my page once upon a time that was, it said, hell, and it was Tetris blocks falling into a curved bottom. Yeah, it was pretty funny.
Yeah. Every once in a while, I have a coworker who likes to send me an animated GIF of somebody like building up a huge, like, intricate thing in Tetris, and then, like, at the very last minute, it goes in slow motion and then zooms in as he's about ready to drop the line, and then boop at the end. He turns it sideways and it blocks it off. He just knows that it's going to piss me off. Ben, what does Kilo say?
Kilo says, in sixth grade, I got suspended in the first day of school. My parents took away all gaming privileges for a month. Games were really all I had then, so I started to go stir crazy in a way that must have scared them. I can go without now, but it's scary to look back at to when I felt I had so little.
Dude, what the hell do you do to get suspended on the first day, man? Like, what? What kind of... Okay, never mind.
I mean, can you come back naked?
Yeah, right?
And you think, oh, this is just a stress dream, and then it's not.
No, there's no Tetris. This can't be a stress dream. Oh, gosh. The first day. Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Huh. Dennis,
they just wanted to make a statement with someone. That's what it was.
This is, oh yeah,
teacher's approach is, you know, you got to smack down the first kid that steps out of the line.
Yeah, it's reverse prison. Dennis, what does Roop say?
Roop says, I've left gaming a few times during my younger days. I put almost all my free time into our band at the time, and he sends the link to it, so check that out. But the most recent one was a little under 2 years ago. I had a blog about video games, so I had to replay games a lot so I could give a truthful opinion about those. Also, I played the shittiest games in Desura, etc., just to make a blog. Making two lengthy posts a week and at the same time going through the hardest courses on my path in the University of Applied Sciences really got to me, even though only a handful of people read the blog. I put so much effort into it. After making the decision to quit the blog, I didn't play for a few months. It was tabletop games that got me interested in video games again.
Yay, tabletop. Yeah. I miss tabletop. I wish I had people to play tabletop with, but, like, they're all far away. Mm. And I know you can schedule that kind of a thing online, but scheduling adults is
really hard. Yeah.
I think that, I mean, that's the fine line that you walk on when, you know, you're using your enjoyment of the hobby to create other content.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a problem that's probably unique to the people on this show, but kind of checking yourself and being like, okay, am I actually enjoying what I'm playing here, or am I doing it just because I'm hoping it will make something interesting?
Yeah.
And keeping that in balance.
I mean, it's strange to see this from, like, from a different perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You just don't usually see... it's not something I see a lot in other people, even though it is categorically what I do. I will say that I play more games now than I at any other point in my life. Yeah.
I play a larger variety than I used to play, mostly because, you know, when you only have X amount of money and there's only X number of games to rent available to you back in the day on a console, you know, versus now with Steam and bundles and whatever, you just have too much.
Yeah. Yeah, that's that's strange. I'm curious about this. When he did those younger days, almost all of his free time into that about 2 years ago. Huh, so that's during the lifetime of the shows. Be curious, like, if that still exists, send me a link, Rube. I'm curious what kind of work you did there. Phil writes saying, well, for a few months I was stuck in basic training and couldn't get anywhere near a video game. That counts, right? Other than that, I can't think of any deliberate time where I've given up gaming. Just a few weeks here and there where I didn't have the time or energy due to other obligations.
Well, where Phil Holmes dares. Yes. Nobody else gets this joke except for Phil.
I know that it is a joke.
Yes, there's an image of a soaring eagle with Phil Holmes' head on it.
Naturally.
Yeah. Nobody knows who made it. It just appeared one day.
No. I made it for reasons pertaining to a conversation on Twitter long, long ago, but it crops up in the Slack channel sporadically. So,
surprised that's not a very small, hard-to-interpret emoji by now.
Yeah, it would be ridiculously hard to figure out what it is.
Yeah. No, I think that second paragraph there about just kind of like, oh, just a few weeks here and there, that's just a break. you know?
Yeah.
I think everybody has a rhythm where they, where they, where they not fall out of love, but it's like, oh, your interest is elsewhere.
If you count like being busy with other stuff and therefore not having time to do stuff, like that's been the last couple of weeks for me. Mm-hmm. Like I checked on Steam and I'm like, oh, like 4 hours worth of games in the last 2 weeks. Oops. Mm. You know? But luckily I usually have a backlog of stuff to talk about.
Yeah.
So.
Jala, what does Graham say?
Graham says, ever since I first started playing video games, there has only been a few days where I haven't played any games at all, and I've never been outright disinterested in video games, except once. The lead-up to Mother 3's release was probably the most hyped I had ever been with a video game. Actually playing it, though, was an absolute letdown.
Hmm.
So much so that I quit playing games for a few days and invested more time into other hobbies. I got over it by remembering that StarCraft was pretty balla, and playing that game revitalized my love.
A few days.
Huh. Yeah, it's like, you know, Steven's reply of a few hours, man. Like,
I suppose. I just, huh, it'll be weird when I get to my answer.
They need a game IV.
Yeah, huh. That's the first person I've heard being really disenchanted with Mother 3. Like, I've heard people say, like, yeah, it's not as good, but to make you question your love of the medium.
That's got to say something about the hype level right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the hype. That's not, that, you know, maybe the experience wasn't the greatest, but the hype will make that come crashing down way worse.
Yeah. Huh. Ben, what does Amanda say?
Amanda says, I gave up on Fallout 4 for a bit because my expectations were way too high, and I played through Coder on my Kindle. A Knights of Old Republic on my Kindle. I'm enjoying Fallout 4 a lot more now that I waited. Generally speaking, I don't tend to finish video games very often, or if I do, it is after picking up and putting down games for over a period of months or even years.
I hear you, lady, because I often do that myself, except now that I've gotten into this habit of playing short games, or games that I can co-op and finish co-op. If I co-op it, I'll finish it.
Yeah. So. Huh. Yeah, well, like, good on you guys for being able to put down a game and ever get back to it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I do. I never really fully drop anything that I pick up unless I just flat out tell you I'm done with it. Like, I will go back to it and I'll give it another shot, you know. And even if I, you know, start it and it just does not hit me right, like to the moon, I'll go back to it sometime.
Yeah.
It may be a long time from now, but I'll get back to it eventually. You know, and then I'll be like, I can see it now.
Like when the sequel comes out.
Yeah, right. We talked about that.
Yeah. Dennis, what does Brian say?
Brian says, not as an extended period, but I have a tradition where every time I beat a game, I do something other than gaming for the rest of the day.
That's pretty good.
I kind of like this, especially if you're happy with the way things go.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you liked the ending of the game, I think there's something to kind of... sitting in that for a bit.
Yeah, but like if you beat it at 11 o'clock at night.
Well, you know.
Gee, that's a lot of, woo, good job.
But it's like, it calls to mind, like there's a writer, I forget specifically who, but it's always writers who have these like work practices that always seem so bizarre from the outside. But it was a writer who, you know, he wrote from, let's say, 7 a.m. to 11 a.m. every single day. Right. And it didn't matter if he finished a book at 8:30, he would pick up another piece of paper and start the next book because God damn it, he wrote from 7 a.m. to 11 a.m. every day.
Hmm.
So I'm transferring that to games. I'm imagining somebody just like joylessly finishing a game and then joylessly doll eyed, just moving his mouse over to the next icon and starting it.
That sometimes happens. I can attest to this. There have been times I have pushed through a game just because other people like it and or it was given to me. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, and then I finished it. And there was no joy to be had from the experience, but it is done. And now I will go play something I want to play.
It's it's funny because I always finish games late at night.
Oh yeah,
that's what I'm saying, man. Like, you know, half an hour before you go to bed. Good job.
No, I think there's some natural momentum to that, where if you can kind of sense when you're close to the end, and so you'll always kind of lean in to finish a game.
Yeah.
So if you start playing games at 9 o'clock at night, there's really you know 2 hours, and so you can consider it late at night.
Mm-hmm.
And so no one's going to be like, oh, I've got a half hour left. I'm going to put this down until another day.
Yeah. No, definitely. Like, just the gut instinct that I have for completion. I wouldn't call myself a completionist, but just kind of like, man, if I can cross this off my list, boy, that's going to be a sweet feeling. David writes in saying, nope. even during the deepest, darkest corners of New Parenthood, I found time to game. People may make addicted to games jokes, but as someone who stooped as low as playing Clash of Clans because I was up often enough for their timers to be a non-issue, I can say it's legit.
That's funny.
Huh.
It is. I was actually very surprised as a new parent that I felt like I had more time to game almost than before. Just because I was consistently, like he's describing, up at odd hours, mm-hmm. where I'm really doing nothing more than kind of waiting.
Do you find that changes as your kid gets more mobile?
Definitely during the day.
Yeah.
But you know, Luke still goes to bed before 8 every single night. Mm-hmm. So logistically, you know, there's still a wide open swath where I'm kind of on my own every night anyway. Yeah. Now, I'm sure that'll change as he gets older and wants to stay up later.
Yeah.
But for now, it's just meant that the gaming is in a more focused window rather than necessarily less.
And
it's a swath.
Yeah. And like how much would you say that, like, you're helped out by the fact that Jen likes to play games too?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely, being able to just unwind together that way is really good.
Yeah. It's nice because you don't have to compromise between, you know, wife, child, and game.
Yeah, you don't feel like you're chasing anyone out of the room.
Yeah. Well, that's delightful. Let's see here. Jala, what does Mike say?
Mike says, I never outright quit, but like most young adults, actually, is 26 just adult? You're as young as you feel, bud. All right. I think I'm still categorized as an entitled millennial burn boy by media, at least. The constraints of money and free time make you more choosy about games. The real highlights always draw me in, like your Whichever Souls or an Undertale or Witcher 3. But unless a game really hits on my preferences, I'll sooner play nothing than play something that feels lukewarm. I hate to think I'm missing out on some fascinating experiences, but all of life is the whole, I saw my life branching out before me, blah, blah, Sylvia Plath thing. So I try not to mourn for games not played.
Yeah. Down that path lies that Twilight Zone episode where, you know, there was time now, there was time. And your glasses can break, and yeah, it's terrible.
Yeah, there's plenty of games, especially like, you know, big franchises that I just have never freaking played in my life. Like, I might have seen somebody else play them, you know, and watched them play the thing, but I've never played it before. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, that's fine. Like, I will admit, Cole, I have never played Silent Hill. I have only ever watched someone play Silent Hill. I've been in the room when they have played it. I have not myself played a Silent Hill game.
Yeah.
And
have
I
you
don't
seen the movie?
Like... Yes.
Okay.
So, yeah, like, I watched that one, and that was in the theaters, and I was in the room the whole time the game was being played, but, you know, like, I don't feel I need to go back and play it because I already saw it happen. It's fine. It's cool. You know? But
it is interesting that sometimes, like, a Let's Play can fulfill the experience of playing a game, even though you're not the one controlling it.
Well, depending upon the type of game, like, there are games where it is enough based on the mechanics that I feel like I need to go back and play that, or maybe it has so many different branching paths and different things you can choose that I feel I want to go back in and have that experience. But a lot of times, I can watch somebody else play the game and be cool with it. Or if it's something like Azure Dreams, I can, you know, like, I used to go back and forth with my boyfriend at the time, and I would play for a while and then pass out, laying my head on his lap, and then he would play for a while and then pass out, and, you know, we would just tap out and play the same game, you know, back and forth between the two of us, so, you know, and just watch each other play, and then, you know, like, wake up, I got to, like, floor 35 or whatever, oh, that's awesome, Z, go back.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, it's weird with streaming and Let's Plays and other kinds of, like, passive ways to enjoy games. I'm curious to see, like, if those ebbs and flows are going to be as pronounced. Huh. Let's do two more. Ben, what does Chase say?
She says, it was less giving up, but there was an ebb and flow. Hey, that's on the mind. For much of my young life. While we always had an NES and Game Boys in the house, we totally missed the Super NES. Even with the N64, I split my time between reading and gaming, with reading taking a healthier portion of my time, in more way than one probably. As I got older, games took the place of books as the thing to talk about, so reading became a secondary hobby, with games reigning supreme.
Yeah.
That's an interesting concept that we're to the point now of like, I just keep up with the game, so I got something to talk about at the water cooler.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like TV, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, it's nice that it's big enough to occupy that space now.
Yeah. And Dennis, round us out with Sam.
Yeah, Sam says, only if you count that I didn't have a Nintendo or home computer until I was 5 or 6. Being in a situation where I don't have access to my computer or consoles for a long period of time just means hundreds of hours of Pokemon.
Yep.
Understandable. No,
you always have it. There's always Pokemon. There's always money
in
the banana stand.
One for each Pokemon.
There's always money in the banana stand, and there's always Pokemon.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, this is a Poke-heavy episode.
Really? It's on the brain.
Yeah, I think so. Sound like some kind of prion. Yeah. So I'll go ahead and do mine, just because it's relative. It's not inexplicable, but like, no, it has a big difference. Late high school and early college, I played far fewer games.
Is that because I was playing a bunch of games in the dorm room?
No. It was honestly for like that period. Up through like early 2007, watching you guys play games and, you know, doing like pass the controller kind of stuff was the most game that I really played. Right. But like from like 2004, I could probably even mark it like when Halo 2 came out and that whole group of friends that I had in high school kind of dissolved. Most of my like frenetic game playing from like just the holdover days of like late PlayStation era RPGs and the early PS2 era, you know, kind of frenzy of like new stuff and new game types and kind of things really languished. And the release of the Xbox 360 didn't really do much of anything. There was a little bit of a blip with Oblivion, but like I was straight up like mostly tied up with like high school stuff, you know, girlfriends and reading and, you know, show choir and stuff like that. And so a lot of that took a back seat aside from like a little bit of like PC gaming kind of stuff. Right. Like either playing like that was around the period that I played like all of the Myst games. You know,
Oh, sure, yeah.
In order. And it was around him. I played like Half-Life 2, but like everything just kind of fell off. Nothing reached the pitch of those early 2000s with like PlayStation era RPGs. Honestly, until like after the 360 generation started picking up.
Did Rock Band get you back into gaming?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Okay. That's a big part of it that like got me into the habit of playing games every day. Yeah. So that was mine. Like late high school kind of coinciding with the waning of the PS2 era and the beginning doldrums of 360. Jala, how about you?
Well, yeah, I fell out of games for a while and I played games like a freak all through all of my younger days, all through high school, all through college. It was actually when I was out on my own and I had just gotten past a very long relationship that broke up, and most of my gaming systems at that time were like communally owned between the two of us. We both shared and bought things, and he ended up taking a good chunk of the systems with him. But at the same time, not only did I miss all of these systems and not want to rebuy them, but then I was also starting to change my nutrition and starting to do physical fitness. And then I became like, I got so freaking ripped that I ended up being a fitness instructor. And the people that I knew who did fitness stuff, they were the people I was hanging out with more. And they didn't really play games, most of them. So I didn't play games again until my sister, who, you know, this whole time has been playing games, got me onto Steam on my PC, at which point I got back into playing games primarily as co-op, as like a communal thing, which is why communal games are usually like, you know, in any media. Like I stopped watching TV a long time ago, too. And like I only watch stuff if I'm doing it as a social thing. So that's why co-op games or shorter games are usually more my thing than You know, like the longer winded things is just because the way that my training works and the way that, you know, my art and my day job and all that goes, like it's just packed full of stuff and it's easier for me to do bite-sized things or social types of interactions.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like one preoccupation replaced another.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. Like it just shifted from, you know, being in one place, sitting down, consuming media to turning around and making media, you know, like making art, writing stories, doing things like that. And then doing physical fitness and physically, you know, doing other things with mm-hmm. my time other than just like my relaxation at that point would be to visit with people or to meditate or to read a book or something.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Hmm. Ben, how about you?
So I was trying to think of a time. I don't really think I've ever gone on a hiatus. I think the only equivalent is I've gone a long time playing like a single game. So I remember there was like maybe a 6-month period of time where I was just playing Modern Warfare 2. I wasn't really interested in other games besides that. And consequently had not a lot to contribute to the podcast, but I think that's about it. I don't think there's ever been a time where I've like went cold turkey or specifically tried to give up a game.
I'm curious because if we framed this question in a way that said accepting times like include as a hiatus anytime you stopped playing every game except World of Warcraft, right? because that's a kind of hiatus itself, right?
Maybe. I don't know. I haven't played it.
Yeah. Well, no, but I mean, I'm going to play this game to the exception of everything else. And I feel like that stops being like, oh, I'm experiencing a whole bunch of new stuff. And yes, I am totally valuing novelty above all else here. But like, just like for me, when I've had those preoccupations with MMOs or like other games that are kind of that appointment viewing, to the it blocks a bunch of other stuff out.
Okay.
Am I a crazy person?
No. Well, not for this reason.
Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, I think the only time that comes to mind for me, other than, you know, what Sam said about not having one until I was a couple years old, was when it was right when I was moving into my current house from my apartment and David and I got robbed and my PS3 got stolen.
Yeah.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah. And so I was kind of without a system and in a new place, and there was plenty of things to keep me busy with house projects and moving in general.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was kind of a break. And I think it wasn't, I forget what time of year that was. It was in the fall. It really wasn't until Christmas when Jen gave me another PS3 as a present that I kind of came back around to gaming.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, like I didn't get a new console after my consoles flew out the door. And so like although I got a PS3 at the end of 2014, I don't really play it too much because I've been playing PC since, you know, like I got back into gaming. So most everything I can either emulate on my, you know, PC, or I already have like one of the older systems, at least a couple of them, you know, so either that, or of course you can get it on GOG or Steam or something. So I just never got back into consoles. Not just because, not like I hate consoles, I just didn't sink the money in it. Like
that was going to push you, you know, there, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, again, social gaming is my thing these days. So, like, you know, although, yes, I can play online on a console, I can also do that on PC. So why am I going to buy a console if I can already do that with my current hardware? You know, like,
short
it's not
topical.
Really.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, short topical interjection. Apparently, PS4, there's going to be PC crossplay for them coming up. That was a new story I saw, but didn't mention.
Yes. They already have that with stuff like Rocket League. You can play with PS4 or PS whatever, some mm-hmm. PlayStation or another. I don't know which one, but whatever. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Hmm. Well, thank you, everybody, for writing in with your responses. If you want to participate in those, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and check out those prompts when they go up, usually on Tuesday afternoons.
the grind.
Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about the games we've been playing over the past, well, here it's going to be like 2 weeks now. Jala, since it's been the longest since you've been here, I'm going to defer to you.
It hasn't been the longest since I've been here. I was on the last time we recorded.
You were on the Listener Hostile episode?
I suppose.
Maybe.
Yes, I was, because I was saying this is a very hostile episode. What is wrong with it? Then you have vim and vinegar and everything. Yeah, I said that.
Oh, well, can't I just defer to you for no other reason then?
Yes, you can absolutely do that, but I was just going to say...
It's been a long time, Jala, don't worry.
Well, I finished Sniper Elite 3 with Sam.
Yeah.
All of the DLC, because we finished the main game before and we finished the DLC now. So the DLC was cut up into two different parts. There was a single Kill Hitler mission, which was really lame. It didn't even have a cutscene, and the actual level was like half the size of a normal level, and there wasn't anything exciting about it, really.
It's obligatory in a Sniper game. It's like contractually you have to have it in there.
Well, and then the Save Churchill, it was a three-part DLC with long levels, which were cool. They were good levels. No Churchill in any of them, because, you know, like, Churchill's off somewhere else, and you're just, like, you know, keeping the bad guys down so that way they don't have the chance to go find him and kill him, you know. But, like, they were good levels. It ended with a sniper battle, which... It was really funny because, like, after playing stuff like Metal Gear Sniper Battles and then, like, playing this one, I'm just like, okay, whatever. But, you know, that's okay. It was still pretty fun. I like the fact that in Sniper Elite 3, they do give you a little bit of play insofar as ways to solve issues. Like, say, for example, at one point you have to fight a tank, and you can actually, if you can hit the tank from where you are before it triggers that battle, you can actually take down the tank before you get to the battlefield and not even have to worry about, you know, being engaged with it, you know, face to face and having to sneak around and whatever. Like, so I had a Panzer Shrek and I was just like, blow that motherfucker up, and
which of course is a tank a tank shaped like Shrek.
Yeah. So anyway, so yeah, like I beat that with Sam, and that was cool. We had to do the last part several times because the save point for that was way the hell back at the beginning. So like if you failed at the end of it, you had to go back. And then there were stupid things happen. Like I fell off of a bridge when I hit the space bar to jump, and I didn't jump, and other things like that. And I'm like, really? Fuck you, game. I'm so mad. But anyway, the best thing was the line at the end of the game, which was, you know, like, the Sniper Elite games have such cheesy dialogue. It was, Churchill's job is to save lives, and my job is to take them, or something stupid like that. And I was just like, okay, whatever, guy. This is awesome. But the villain you had to fight in the Churchill DLC was a guy named Raubvogel, which basically means, like, a bird of prey. And he had, like, a super cool metal mask for no fucking reason over his face.
That's it. And
that's it. There were ghillie suit guys. That's all I got to say about that.
But the metal mask make it so you couldn't headshot him? Like,
no, I shot him in the face a bunch of times. It's just, he was a boss, and you're like, you know, like I found him, and you know, like I was like, shoot, shoot, shoot. Oh my fucking god, die already!
Pating, pating, pating.
Yeah, right. So
he's like, best $5 I ever spent.
Oh man. So
it's one half of Army of Two.
Yeah. So that was my experience with that. It was as long as you understand that the story is really not the focus of this game whatsoever. Right. You're just derping around shooting dudes and having fun. You're good to go. And that's what I was doing with Sam, and it was understandably fun. I think we're going to be going to the Nazi zombie trilogy next, which is more or less, from what I have seen, basically Left 4 Dead, but with more headshots type of thing.
Okay.
So yeah, like Nazi zombies, and you shoot them, and survival thing.
As happens, yeah.
Yeah, so whatever, like that'll be a thing I'll talk about sometime after we play some. Anything about that before I move on? I enjoyed it.
Can you give me a short recap of how co-op works in this game? Because I have a vague recollection of saying, oh, is one of you the spotter? And you said no.
No, like there's dude and then dude with slightly different hair color. And you are dropped in the level and you can act however you want to. Like Sam and I would split up and, you know, go in different directions a lot of times. And, you know, meanwhile, he'd go off one direction, I go off in the other direction. We'd just start taking dudes down. And then one of us would be bleeding out because somebody shot him and be like, fuck, where the hell are you?
kind of a spy versus spy situation.
Yeah. I mean, like, I'm sure you could do the whole, like, spotter type thing where one of you is just sitting full-time binocular or whatever, but we didn't do it that way. We really didn't even snipe most of the time. We just, like, went up and shot fools in the face with, like, our rifles, just whatever, just blasting through everything. I mean, we started by trying to snipe and do all that, but given the time constraints that we had and just the level of investment that we had in the game, it's not like we were trying to get perfect scores. We're like, it's fine.
Yeah,
yeah. Let's just kill these people.
We're not trying to five-star this shit.
Yeah, so we just kind of blazed through that. So I'm trying to get him, like, the next time it goes on sale, I'm going to get him Resident Evil 6. And I'm not going to talk about it on the show. Don't worry. I already covered it.
You've said everything there is to say. Yeah,
There is nothing else to say about that game between everybody on this podcast talking about that game.
For sure. I don't think we ever really got heat from anybody. I think that we just joked about it.
Yeah.
I think that we just joked, like, especially like around the time that it came out, that I took so long to play it, and then by the time I finished it, somebody else had picked it up, and then you got on. So it was like, it's the most discussed game on the show.
Well, what I need to do is actually play the other modes, not the actual story mode, but all the other survival and, you know, versus agents and team like battle type, whatever the hell,
the mercenary thing.
Yeah, all that crap.
Yeah, I want to do teen battle.
Yeah,
you know, where you fight all of them as teenagers.
That's why there's no college students at the college level.
Oh gosh, yeah, they Danganronpa'd.
Okay, so that was the first thing I played. Anything else about that one?
No, mentioning Resident Evil made me remember that there is a Resident Evil sale on, and I'm buying Code Veronica X for the PlayStation 3, and then I'm gonna get a digital copy of Resident Evil 3 Nemesis.
Yeah. So I've actually never played Resident Evil 6, so maybe I should pick that up so we can continue talking about it.
You should pick it up, Ben, and I'll play it with you.
Yeah, you have the PC now, so you can definitely play it.
Yeah. You can play it, and I don't care that I've played it a million times. I'll play it again. It's fine. It's totally like a drinking game. I will. Every time anybody says, you know, whatever.
That's like Portal 2 for me. I must have watched 4 or 5 people play that game and beat it in my living room. So
yeah,
it's fine. So anyway, okay.
What's your other game?
My other game is Dream Revenant. Dream Revenant is an iOS game that is released by like the same production company, Bulky Pix, that did the Lone Wolf game that I talked about before.
Right.
It's on iOS. It's $1.99 now.
As opposed to Balky Pix, which made that Perfect Strangers adaptation. It was like a Telltale kind of thing.
I don't know. Okay, so this game is made by one guy in the Unreal Engine. It is basically a first-person, story-driven, open-world adventure game where you're basically in the subconscious of a dying man. Like, it starts with you in a hospital bed, and then it just kind of, like, goes into your subconscious from there. And you have to piece together like everything that's going on, you know, like what exactly your story as a person is, and, you know, all of the events leading up to where you are right now in the hospital bed.
Yeah.
And it is you know, it's got like floating islands in the sky kind of thing going on, and it's set in the late 60s. You are a cartoon strip, like a comic strip, newspaper strip artist, and your art is based on your own life, mm-hmm. but also haunted by your own life. Like, very quickly you find out all of the, you know, rough stuff that happened during your childhood. And say, for example, your best friend when you were growing up was a girl named Willa who was black, and you were a white boy mm-hmm. in a farm town, KKK, your parents, and a bunch of different stuff going on the game. And so, like, I don't want to say too much. There is a lot to it that is all story driven, you know, like the whole point of the game is to unfold all of the story bits. So I don't want to say too much about that, but it's very pretty. It is glitchy, unfortunately, because it was made for, like, optimized for iPhone 4 and 5, has not been optimized for 6, I think.
Oh, wow.
You know, so, I mean, like, it hasn't been optimized. So there are glitches. I played through the entire thing in about an hour and a half or 2 hours, but even if there's a glitch that happens, a lot of times you can just, like, go to the map and then warp back to the beginning, and then it fixes the glitch. So, you know, like, even if there are glitches, you can work around it, and it's not too much of an imposition, because it's not like you have to fight battles or anything like that to get around. It has autosave features, so if you get to a point in the game, you don't have to worry about, oh, God, it glitched out and I don't have it saved. Like, no, it'll save it for you, so you're cool. It's voice acted, it's 3D graphics. The progress is locked in certain areas where you have to explore and pick up objects to unlock different things. Like, you need a skeleton key to get through a certain door, or
a door
things
made
like
of
that.
Bones. Yeah. like adventure game shit, right?
Yeah, so it's adventure game stuff. It's like a big fetch quest, but it's all an adventure game anyway, so it's not a bother to do all of that. Mm-hmm. It has memorable music, and it has, you know, like, all the times that you go through and you find bits of your comic, which you do, you know, consistently throughout the game, it tips you off as to hints as to where things are that you need to get to solve different riddles in the game and see the rest of the story. And there are parts where they have, like, button tappy type of events where, like, you can use telekinesis or x-ray vision, but you have to, or super strength, but you have to do certain taps in certain areas, kind of Simon Says style, at certain points. And there's not very many of those, but they do happen. The thing that I like about it is that when it first introduces this mechanic to the game, it shows it, like, as if it were an ad for x-ray vision goggles or, you know, super strength pills or something, like, out of a comic.
Does, like, a BioShock almost.
Yeah, yeah, it's really cute. So I liked it a lot. And in either case, the entire game, like I said, real short, $1.99. Even if there are some glitches in the gameplay, it's well worth the money. Anybody who likes stuff like Gone Home or any of the other kind of story-based walking simmy type games that we played, like even, you know, like Beginner's Guide or things like that, you'd probably really dig this game as well. Just because it's at the end of the game too, there are two endings, and it's very, very obvious at the end of the game when you have to make the decision. There are literally arrows pointing in the direction, and you have to walk in a specific direction. So, like, you can consciously choose which ending you want to go to, and it shows you different areas, and you get to choose where you want to go. And, you know, like, because it autosaves, in order to see both endings, you have to go back and play the game again. But I don't see this as a problem, because once you've seen all of the pieces of the game...
Because YouTube exists.
Well, no. Actually, I looked on YouTube to see if I could find the other ending, and I couldn't. So that's not an option, at least not when I did my cursory search. But no, because after you've gone through the entire game, to go back and then pick up the nuances from all the things that are being said to you throughout the game, it's well scripted. So, like, when you go back and you listen to it all again, it's really kind of, you know, more poignant, and it hits you even harder when you are going through the second time around. So I really actually think that it's definitely well worth playing both times to see both of the two endings.
Yeah.
So, but it's really an enchanting game, and I enjoy it, and I will probably go back and play it again. So that, I definitely recommend it.
The premise of a comic book author who's kind of dragged into his own world here makes it sound like this is a grittier, more psychological reboot of Cool World. Can you confirm or deny?
Deny. Okay. It is not. you come across times where the comic pages from the things that you produced, you know, like, you get to pick up and read some of the comics that you have produced since you've been a comic artist. However, the world that's in your subconscious is not your comic world. It is your real memories and experiences that you are going through. It's kind of more like if you ever read Jodi Picoult's novel, The Tenth Circle, where There are comic parts interspersed throughout the novel, and the comic parts relate directly to the experiences of the comic creator during the novel.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more like that than it would be a cool world or anything like that, because this isn't like the fulfillment of a fantasy or something crazy like that. It's just, you know, this is the reality. This is the kind of comic interpretation that you made for this comic strip for a newspaper, you know? So, but it's a really good game. And I think that you specifically would really enjoy it, Cole.
Yeah. So. I'm curious about it. I'm a little bit scared off by the idea that it's kind of one of these neglected games or apps.
I don't really know that it's necessarily that it's neglected so much as it's one guy who's made multiple games and he's got to try to like get everything, but still produce new stuff, but then also go back and fix all the old stuff.
Right. And that's one of the big problems with the App Store. I'm not using neglect in the pejorative here because, you know, if he's only one guy and, you know, like if this is a Unity or Unreal 3D exploration game, that's really impressive for one person to make and put out. And the fact that it got outdated isn't really his fault, but that does get in the way of the ability to go back and play this thing to my mind. And, you know, like I've kind of fallen away from iOS gaming a bit, like especially since my iPad 3 decided to start shitting the bed with the lights on. But like, you know, I put this game on a list when you talked with me about it. Just kind of like, oh, I need to go check this out once I get the new iPad Pro that's coming out, the 9 or the 10 inch one that's going to be announced here in March, you know, just as part of my 4-year upgrade cycle or whatever. There's a bunch of games I want to go back and play, but like if this isn't going to run on 10.9 iOS 9, that's a real bummer for me.
Well, here's the thing. It's not that it doesn't run. Like I played through a large chunk of the game, probably the first hour of the game without having any problems. And then there were some glitches, like you would go to a certain area and after a certain series of events, sometimes the scenery would like, you know, start floating upwards for no reason. And then you'd warp back and then like warp back to the beginning and then walk back and then it'd be fine. And then that was the end of the glitch.
I mean, like,
it's not
stuff that will make the game unplayable.
No, it's not stuff that makes it unplayable. It makes it where you have to, you know, like I said, warp back to the beginning on the map and then walk back. But like, it's not that far of a walk and it's not that much of an imposition time-wise to where it makes it terrible and you can't play through the game.
Yeah.
It just makes it where like, yeah, okay, be aware that it's probably going to happen at some point and that you will need to probably warp back on the map and then go walk back over there and then it'll be fine when you come back. Like, I don't know.
Well, that's good then, because when I hear glitches, especially on iOS, like when iOS game glitches, like you lose progress and in an adventure game, that just sucks.
No, and it literally, because it autosaves, it'll autosave. Even if it autosaves when you glitch, it doesn't save the glitch. It just saves the progress.
Yeah.
So if you were to, you know, restart your iPad and go back in, it's fine. Like, it doesn't mess with
it. Are these glitches even trying?
No, they are really, like, they exist. They are glitches. They are, you know, irritations, yes. But, like, I didn't have a lot of them. There were only, like, one or two points during the entire gameplay process of going back through this game, you know, 3 or 4 hours that I played it, you know, that I had any problems. And it was in set areas, set series of events that led up to these things happening. It wasn't like, you know, debilitating where I couldn't play the game.
Yeah.
But I don't want to recommend this game to you and then not tell you that there are going to be some glitches, you know?
Yeah. I mean, just if it's run of the mill, like the world gets goofy Bethesda glitches, I'm fine. If it's you lose progress Bethesda glitches,
you're not going to lose any progress in any of this. You just need to, like I said, there's ways to work around it and it might cause you 15 seconds more of walking, but it's not going to, you know, kill the game and it's not going to be so repetitive that you're just going to get frustrated and flip a table, you know, you're fine.
Cool.
Yeah, but it's a really, I wish I could talk about the story more.
No, it's one of those.
But it's one of those that it's a really good story. It's well scripted and the music is memorable and kind of haunting. And it's a story that's like, it's real. Let's just put it that way. Like, it's not super saccharine, happy, happy skippy, but it's not always depressed and whatever either. Like, it's a nice balance of just, you know, real people dealing with real situations that would have happened to them had they been alive at that time and dealing with whatever. So. Yep.
Cool. Well, is that all?
That is it.
Awesome. Let's see here. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, I don't actually have a ton new. I will say that I beat the Magic Circle, though.
Okay.
So that is an absolutely delightful game. And without spoiling anything about the ending, I found myself very conflicted on things that I thought I was going to be very sure of.
Yeah.
To the point where, you know, I kind of, you know, got to the end game scenario and kind of started down the path that seemed clear. And then, like, as I was doing the things that would have lined up with my original intent, I'm like, well, do I really want to be, I don't know. I feel so bad about this. Like, but oh, I just, and then I would like reverse myself and started trying to do the complete opposite. So, the ending really, really delivers. And I think creating that kind of conflict, was very well done on their part.
Nice. Yeah. So, you know, the more distance I get from it, the more I get like, it's kind of like not bummed out, but it's kind of underwhelmed by the idea of specifically the two women characters, Coda and Maze. Like, they were just kind of cartoonishly presented. And what I really wanted was more Dr. Venture. And specifically his and specifically his plot, you know, with his relationship to this thing. And specifically Coda kind of existed just to be a stock villain and a fuck you to fans. And like, I was really down for the way Dr. Venture's story ended with it. But yeah, like, just like how did you feel about them in the final kind of the final analysis?
Interesting. Yeah, I hadn't thought about it from that angle before. They are not necessarily one-dimensional, but do kind of have a thread or a theme. So it's they kind of are meant to present a very specific point of view, and are kind of all in on that. So I wasn't disappointed by it. Didn't feel like they needed to be more. They served the purpose of the story very well. So I think it, maybe it comes down to, I think it was probably more a choice of focus on, hey, what is this story going to be about and how do I tell that story, than of maybe neglect.
Yeah. It just, they rang a little bit hollow for me. And like, initially I was okay with them because they kind of like represented, like, it almost felt like they were like either like id or ego or something like that.
You could write an English paper on that for sure.
Yeah. But they were a different temperament, or they were just kind of like representing something, but like their purpose in the plot was, it ultimately felt like, they were accelerating a destruction within this work that was going to destruct anyway.
Yeah.
because of who was leading it. So it was kind of like, I don't, you know.
Yeah. And then, but I think they also, you know, serve to shed light on in different ways the reasons why the creator is so destructive or so doomed to failure. And kind of the game did a great job making me do kind of a 180 of just like this dick to having empathy.
Yeah.
And I think it's so easy to go the other direction. Like, it's so easy to take someone and turn them into a monster.
Yeah.
I think it's a little bit harder to take a monster and turn them into someone that you care about.
You have sympathy for, definitely. That final scene with him.
Yeah.
his filibuster. Yeah.
Yeah, even then though, I would say that kind of felt a little bit staged as well. Like, you almost, I can't remember if they make a direct reference to it, but you almost feel like he had rehearsed it.
Mm-hmm.
And like, this is, you almost get this inkle of, well, maybe this is what he really wanted, or it's kind of been, he's, but you know, from that, then you get to, well, maybe he's, Yeah. He's given up on his real moment, and so he's fallen so far as to put all his hope into this fake moment.
Yeah.
And that this horrible substitution for the real thing, that plays really well with the overall themes of the game.
It just the way that it felt to me was like, you know, I've gone back and forth being like, oh, is he flailing right now? Is he just saying whatever will make people feel the worst? Or is this something where, like, he's probably rehearsed it, but, like, it's something that he said to himself while he was drinking. And he's just finally able to get, because I've done that, you know? And it's like, he's just finally able to, he finally has venue for it.
Punching straw men.
A little bit, yeah. You know, like, it doesn't have to make a great deal of sense, but, like, it comes from a very dark place. Yeah.
And I think that is the interesting thing, is that they make you, you know, they get you to feel that sympathy for the character without necessarily redeeming him. Right.
Right.
Because maybe, you know, you see other characters that start out as the dicks, and then you find out, oh, there's a layer below them. But usually it's like, oh, explains everything. Now I can totally get. And it's like, no, this guy's still a dick.
Yeah.
But I kind of get why he's that way now.
Yeah. Like, like, reason is neither justification or absolution.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. But that game is exactly as long as it needs to be as well.
Sure. Yeah.
And kind of the twist at the end, which I won't spoil what it is, it's just really, really good.
Yeah.
Very, very delightful.
I want a whole game of that.
I'm not sure if there is, and I just didn't see it, but I would love a way to see what other players did with it.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I'm sure there are some people who just went nuts.
Yeah.
And I would be interested in that. But that is, play this game. Yeah, it's you know, a very small investment of your time relative to video games.
Yeah.
And totally worth it.
It's real neat.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have anything else?
One other thing is I played Helldivers.
Oh, yeah.
And man, yeah. I wanted to like Helldivers. And man, I did not like Helldivers.
give a quick, like, 2-sentence explanation of what Helldivers is.
It's the clunkiest, most frustrating twin stick shooter out there.
Okay, so twin stick shooter.
Yes, twin stick shooters are supposed to be like zippy and bullet hell-esque, and just this one's just hell. I think it suffers before you ever get to the game proper. It suffers from such interface blight. Like they have so much text trying to explain it, and it just does not help. Like there's something going on with, like, you know, everyone is contributing to, like, the massive macro world in some way by fighting these battles, and they all kind of sum up across players and across consoles to push, you know, the aliens in the macro universe out further, or, you know, if you lose, they come in more. And eventually, if the collective gamerverse pushes out the aliens far enough, it triggers like a alien homeworld event where then you have to go in a certain amount of time. Enough people have to clear the alien world mission or something like that to where you win. And it just, like, so it drops all this on you. I'm just like, what buttons do I push though? Like, so you know, you get all that, and then it drops you into the map, and I literally had no idea what I even had selected on the map. Like, I was like, I don't even know where my cursor is or whatever. And so I just, like, hit X to pick something, apparently. And then, you know, it dropped me into this area and was like, hey, the alien homeworld has been invaded. So it's like, great, I'm to the end game thing already? Like, is this what? Like, I haven't even played a level yet, and this is the thing that you just told me happens at the end, but maybe I just joined at the wrong point in the cycle, or I didn't know. And then so then it gave me a choice of all these missions that, like, went up to 12 difficulty, but then there was, like, most of them were, like, in the 5 to 7 range, but I found the one that was, like, 2 and tried that. But again, I don't know why it was a 12-point scale. I have no idea what any of those mean. I go into this thing and just get demolished. And either they just straight up don't balance for having less than 4 players.
Okay.
Or they fall way too far into disempowerment. Because in this, what I think was supposed to be an easy level, the difficulty rating was easy, but apparently it was in this like end of the alien world event, and I don't know. But I just repeatedly died and died and died, and would feel like overwhelmed by enemies that rushed me from off screen.
Yeah.
So they would be off the screen as like these dog enemies that chase you down. They kind of charge in so fast that I didn't really feel like I had time to react. And then they had knocked me down, and when you're knocked down, you have to like mash the X button to get back up. And by the time I'd gotten back up, I'd lost all my health and died. So again, I don't know if they just assume that you were going to have four players, and it doesn't get any easier if you have less than four players. So I just need right. to join with people, and all of a sudden everything will make sense. Or I don't know, like there's an upgrade system. So I don't know if they're just expecting me like, hey, you're supposed to feel this way right now because your weapons are all bad. And maybe as you upgrade, you know, you can get better. But then I didn't even live long enough to get any materials to upgrade with. Like,
right.
So it felt bad from beginning to end, unfortunately.
I will say there's a tough learning curve on that game where you definitely can't go to the planets that are outside of your level.
I don't know if I was outside of my level or not. Like, I have no idea what I picked or why I picked it or where I was supposed to go.
Are there any level one planets? Yeah.
Probably. So
it's been about 6 months since I played the game, so I can't remember what the difficulty curve's like, but I remember learning very quickly that you couldn't go too high outside of your level. You need to kind of work your way up. So that might be the issue, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then again, then it goes back to the interface blight where I did not feel equipped to choose something that was appropriate for me. Yeah. Even after a ton of explanation, I had no idea where the right starting area was.
I mean, it's what it sounds like is they weren't quite sure what order to put the game and the metagame in.
Yes.
And so they just gave you both of them at the same time.
Yes.
When a better experience probably would have been... It'd be facile to say like, hey, just to like calling for a tutorial or whatever, like there's a way to do it, but like drip the information or put you in situations that like don't require you to understand something that is outside of the moment to moment, like get mm-hmm. like let you let the moment to moment breathe for like a second before you actually make it like, you know, put the burden of picking your next challenge or put the burden of you know like what somebody else is doing on you as a player.
It could have stood to be on rails for just a little bit longer. And I think there's also something to be said for giving you, you know, just a couple easy wins up front.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I'm all for the Dark Souls smack you down and make you feel
even Dark Souls thing, has tutorials.
Yeah.
You know, like
give me something to work off of. So that was frustrating, and I don't know if I'll go back and try it again. Co-op game. I love those. I want that. I want to go to there. So it's so disappointing to have it just jar against me so strongly.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's me.
This sucks. Like the second week in a row that you're bitter about something?
Well, last week it was not the game's fault. Like this, like it was it was an infuriating situation where he had been looking forward to a game for 3 years and he can't play it.
For all I know, XCOM 2 delivers on all its promises. Yeah. I think I'm never not salty anymore. But at least it's like you don't want to make the same mistakes over and over again. You don't want to be salty about the same thing over and over again. So at least I'm salty about different
things. Jazzing it up a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. So hopefully But you know the magic circle in there, so that was good all around. So I can balance it a little bit. Hopefully next week I will have nothing to be salty about.
Yeah. Huh, Ben? How about you? What do you have to bring to the table?
So I don't think I have any games that other people haven't played before. So it's all like not retro, but like old stuff. But the new game for me is Pony Island, which I played last week. Yeah. It was pretty fun. It was pretty bite-sized.
Yeah.
It's definitely like a $5 game, I think. So I thought it was enjoyable for what I played of it, but I probably wouldn't play it much longer than I did. So, yeah. I don't know. I don't know how much there is to say about it. I mean, there's definitely cute moments in it, And there's like a few moments in the game that are just as good as like some Metal Gear Solid surprises, I think.
did they get you?
Yeah, they did.
So what's funny is I on a couple of different occasions I've had other people falling for that. I've had that affect me.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. It's kind of like, oh yeah, okay, I understand. Yeah. So but yeah, you definitely it pooked you.
Yeah. The message I wrote was Internet Explorer is not that bad.
You monster. Oh. Huh. Well, yeah, it is definitely a $5 one sitting game.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. So that's Pony Island, Ben. What else have you been playing?
Okay. So I got a couple more on docket. The interesting one is Knights of the Old Republic. I picked that up on Steam just because I was kind of curious.
I know you don't have any familiarity with that game.
Yeah. It's not like your favorite game ever or anything.
I finally am ready to dive in. Yeah. No, it's more just to go back and see what the game's like compared with my memory of what the game is, because it has been a long time since I played it, and I know I have a lot of positive feelings towards it. So it's interesting to go back and see the controls. Like, even the little things like the camera control system that they have seems so outdated, since it's like a pre-Halo system almost.
It's just left and right, like rotate. You can't actually look up and down.
Yeah, there's two buttons to move backwards and forwards with your character, and then there's a button to rotate the camera right and left.
Yeah.
And so it's weird that you have like half the ability that you would typically have with a modern game. But that aside, the music is still great in the game. The character building system is still good. I had forgotten, though, that of the classes you pick, there's cross-class skills. Mm-hmm. So if you're trying to max out like your skill abilities, it's almost impossible for you to do it. Like you're guaranteed to block off some skills that you just won't be good at. So that was something that I completely forgot. And I don't know if they carry that over to Knights of the Republic 2 or not. But yeah, so I haven't gotten far at all. I'm only about maybe an hour and a half in. I got to the first bar. I started playing Pazak. So that's kind of...
Pazak.
Yeah, that's so pretty fun.
Hardcore remembered that being Sabacc, which is the actual thing in Star Wars.
Yeah, that's how Han won the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah. And then I was kind of disappointed when it was not that.
But it's so fun.
It's so good. It's space blackjack. It's deck building space blackjack. There's nothing not to love.
It's mm-hmm. like what's the little monster game in Final Fantasy IX?
Oh, it's like Tetra Master that? The far inferior version to Triple Triad? Yeah.
Yeah, but that kind of, where it's got that just a little bit of deck building built into it. Mm-hmm.
God, yeah. I can't wait to play Final Fantasy VIII again.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck.
It's a trip down retro lane. Might be an order for all of us.
Yeah. Is it holding up? I mean,
so far it's fine. I mean, again, like the writing is really good. The graphics are fine. You know, they're good considering that they're, you know, like going on 15 years or, you know, 12 years old. Yeah. The music is really solid, and like the ambient noise is really good, which is like a weird thing to compliment a game on.
I mean, interesting. Star Wars things always have really good sound design.
Yeah. It's just amazing like how that completely transforms the atmosphere. Because like if you were to go into the cantina and it's just like silent or whatever, it's a completely different experience. You know what I mean? So it's just amazing how much that changes the feel of the game.
You should check out Humble has a Star Wars bundle up.
I saw that and I I slightly gritted my teeth having bought the game like a week before that went on sale. But that's okay.
Oh well.
Yeah. But I'm just going to go. I'm going to go on from there if there are no questions, since it's kind of ground well treaded.
It's Coder. It's good.
Yeah.
Like I know it. I'm just curious, like, at what point does a game that you love kind of stop? Do you stop deriving value from it when you replay it?
Yeah, I'll be curious to find that out. I went with the Rogue class and I'm not specializing in any trait. I only did one point move, so I think I have 5 of the 6 skills at 14, mm-hmm. but nothing's like greater than that. So
yeah,
it's kind of like a well-rounded person, so we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. Like the rogue scoundrel class is that is not a preferred build for Coder 1 because you don't have the weapon finesse, right?
You get critical strike, which is fine. I think flurry is what the middle class has, and some people prefer that to the critical hit. Mm-hmm. As far as like what your special weapon strike is. But I don't think that they're at too big of a disadvantage.
Yeah.
You can only do light armor, but that's not a huge deal because Jedi robes are light armor anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I'm
thinking specifically of like two gives you the feat that lets you add your dexterity modifier to lightsaber attacks as opposed to your strength.
Yeah. You don't have that in this one. Yeah. So I think dexterity was the only thing I held off on putting points in because of that in this game.
Yeah.
So I have high strength, have high constitution, wisdom, charisma, intelligence, and everything. Or it's all at 14, but dexterity is the one thing that I didn't put anything in.
Oh, I just noticed that that Coder 2 is compatible with Mac now. That was not the case a year ago.
Oh. So maybe we can trade off here, Cole. I'll play Coder 1. You can play Coder 2.
Yeah. I wish. I wish I could.
All right. Mm. But I'm going to jump from Coder because I have two more things I quickly want to talk about.
Okay.
So I've also been playing Rocket League a whole bunch. I've been playing with Mikhail on the show.
Yeah.
Goody. Show.
That's been fun. He's pretty solid player, so that's good. And I mean that is a really good game. So if you are on the fence of that, it's a really good multiplayer game. So I'm pretty happy with that. I've definitely gotten my $20 worth of that game because I think I've put over like 40 or 50 hours in it already.
Nice.
So
ooh. Yeah. I guess I should play it with you sometime.
It's fun.
Maybe. And then you can get frustrated with me.
No, it's not that bad. It's, you know, it's a team game. It's whatever. But, okay. And the last thing I have to talk about is The Witness, which I think I've already talked about beating it and being a little bit upset with the ending, how it kind of resets your progress. I think I mentioned that. Yep. It has the ability to do that. Mm-hmm. So I went back to the game that I had restarted and I've gone through and I'm trying to kind of 100% it or find more of the different puzzles there. I did, however, so I found one really good secret of the game that I was very satisfied with because there's apparently two different endings to the game. And so I found the second ending naturally. But then I started looking up how to get some of the environmental puzzles because there's straight up panel puzzles in the game, which are the game proper. But then there's kind of naturalistic puzzles in the game, which is trying to find certain like puzzles that are hidden in the environment.
Yeah, environmental puzzles.
Yeah, I guess that's redundant. But some of those are, I do not know if you would be able to find them on your own, given that there's, I think, maybe like 30 to 50 of them. Some of them are pretty ridiculous, like kind of Braid-esque, where you have to like wait an hour to do something.
Yeah.
So I don't feel completely ashamed of looking up how to do some of those, but I feel slightly ashamed for looking up on how to do some of those. But
there's only so much. Like, you're still going to be you at the end of the day.
Well, the other thing too is it's like the game very much feels like a puzzle box. So I'm kind of interested in knowing basically what all the solutions are and basically like how much depth there is to the game. And so I think I have most of it figured out of like what all you can do with the game. So I don't know if I'll do everything in the game or not, or if I'll just drop it, but that's pretty fun.
Nice.
Cool.
Yeah. You've had a momentous 2 weeks for you, at least a busy 2 weeks.
A lot of bite sized games. Yeah. Yep. But that's it.
Cool. Well, I'm going to round us out. So my biggest thing that I've played over the past week is, it's kind of a similar situation to yours, actually, Ben, where you played Coder, a game that you are, you know, like, is one of your favorites. I played and streamed Silent Hill.
Yep, I was there for some of that.
You were, yeah. So I want to do more streaming. This has been a good excuse to solidify my setup, which I talked about in a backer blog for the Patreon backers. But to get that set up so I can play Silent Hill I put that, I'm talking about the original PlayStation version, and kind of like stream it and then also put it on YouTube as like a Twitch export so that anybody who wants to listen to our Silent Hill 3 episode, because Silent Hill 3 is so intrinsically linked to Silent Hill 1 or the outcomes of that game that it's kind of like hard to, it's just one of those things where like you need to know to a certain extent. So I made that available. And it was a lot of fun to do that stream. You can go to youtube.com/duckfeedtv. And also in the Slack channel, or in the Slack team, I created a channel called Streamy Weamy, at Dennis's suggestion. that is a place for people to discuss streams, announce their streams, and things like that. I'm not sure what I'm going to do next, but like, man, Silent Hill holds up. It looks so good. Like the middle third of it, like after like Alchemilla is a little bit, it's kind of saggy, specifically with like the sewer level and kind of stuff. But like the art direction in that game is so on point. It is so it looks good in spite of itself. And in this kind of quarter, or this, you know, we're at the tail end of a winter where we've just beat our heads against the limitations of this era of games, specifically games for the PlayStation. It's wonderful, you know, to go back and play a game that, yeah, it's still kind of clunky, but they designed it to the limitations of the system in a really like intensely satisfying way. And you look at this and you see kind of the foundations of everything the series would become, and it's still super spooky. And the sound design is ridiculously good.
Yes. Yeah. When I was listening / watching, I was mostly at the same time painting, so I couldn't stare at the screen all the time, but to hear all the creepy ass noises and stuff, I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
All right, cool. So like I'd look over every once in a while and be like, whoa, what the fuck?
Yeah. Were there any scares that you'd forgotten, Cole?
A couple, specifically in the school, relating to the locker room. I love the enthusiasm with that.
Replayed the game, that was one I forgot too, and it freaked me out. Yeah.
Well, it's funny because I associate that scare with Alien so much, right? And so, yeah. And so, like, you can forgive me for forgetting that this game that I really love ripped off a movie I loved wholesale. But like specifically the way that the quote-unquote real world version of that puzzle or that set piece interacts with or contrasts with the fake or the other world part of it. I mean, this is a 17-year-old game.
In the spoilers, dude.
in the real world, you know, you're exploring the school and you go in and there's a locker room and you hear like a rattling in the locker and you open it up and there's a cat scare as it runs out and then, you know, like leaves the room and you hear a monster get it. It's like, oh, well, that's a bit of a bummer because a cat died. But, you know, like you got me. Like it's a jump scare in the purest possible way. When you come back in the nightmare version of the world, the alternate middle school or elementary, the locker is rattling, but you open it up and the inside is just completely caked with blood.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's going to be, oh, well that like the causality of that doesn't make any sense. And as you turn around and walk out of the room, a body falls out of a locker that you pass by.
No big deal.
Yep. So it just kind of like, yeah, it's like, okay, if you expected the, you know, like the scare to be repeated, it's setting up that expectation and then like utterly subverting it.
Then dropping a body on it.
Yep. Oh gosh, pretty good. So it's been fun. I want to stream more because I feel like even over the course of that playthrough I got better at it. I got better at kind of knowing what to talk about. I got better at knowing when to shut up, which is a skill that, you know, it's hard to come by.
Life as well as in streaming.
Exactly. Specifically for me. And for a lot of people, but yeah, I have trouble knowing. But yeah, I'm curious. I think up next, after I get a little bit further ahead on network assignment, you know, like homework, I'm going to try and either do Until Dawn or Echo Night Beyond. But yeah, I'd like to just continue doing some horror streams since I can't actually dedicate the time toward doing like Hex Crank. Like, it'd be fun.
Are you familiar with both of those games? Have you played them before?
Nope.
You should do Until Dawn, and you should let me know when you do Until Dawn.
See, I get the whole like, oh, I'm gonna, you know, it's funny to watch me be scared on camera thing. The thing I've found is that it's very, very difficult to stream your first playthrough of a game.
Yeah.
At least for me, because my natural tendency is to like try to figure it out. And so I get really silent and concentrated because I'm like, what is going on? Or like, so I think I do much better with games, or, you know, just even if it's not replaying content directly, like interfaces that I'm familiar with.
Yeah.
You have to get really good at thinking aloud, I think.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And the thing is I've had people who, okay, I haven't been officially streaming it, but I'll be on, say, Google Hangout again, and I'll have somebody who's on the other side and watching me play a game and going, oh shit, you know, like screen sharing with them so they can see what's going on my screen. And they're just like, oh my God, you know, because they're laughing at me, but at the same time, like enjoying what's going on the screen. So, you know, like, It's fun to do a first playthrough that way, I think.
Hmm.
Especially since, like, I'm very, very reactive to things that I play. So I'm like, what the hell is that thing? Oh, my God. You know, and so that's fun.
Yeah, that is a skill.
Yeah, if I could, I would stream more. But, you know, limitations of my internet connection.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. I don't know. I kind of want to try a game that I haven't played, because most of the stuff that I've streamed has been stuff that I know, you know, going back to Haunting Ground or when I did the Silent Hill thing, like I've been able to like speak to it with some authority. I want to try and react to it on the fly. And like Until Dawn seems like a good way to try that, because Ben, correct me if I'm wrong, but it feels like a game that would, you know, it seems like a game that like feeds itself to you in a line.
So what do you mean?
So there's not an awful lot of like, well, I'm just not sure how to solve this puzzle, or I'm not sure where I need to go next. Like, it is very, it seems very much like scene by scene.
It's very in the style of Heavy Rain.
Yeah.
So in the same way that Heavy Rain would be interesting to watch, like the choices that people make, it would be interesting to watch you play Until Dawn.
Huh. Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, I will let you know when that happens, and you know, like just watch Twitter or something like that. But I'll send you a text if I do it. You know, it won't be like this week. Like I pretty much like marathoned Silent Hill. But
gotcha.
Yeah. No, it was a good time. And I have set things up to make it as easy as possible to do that whenever I want to in the future. So. Yeah, the other thing that I played, and I'm sorry to keep us going so late, but this is a really cool game that a lot of people are talking about, and I want to throw in my hat as saying like, holy shit, this is amazing. Super Hot.
I know nothing about this game.
Yeah, so
I've seen rave reviews, so please enlighten me.
So this is the Super Hot. It's a game that was originally designed for like a 7-day FPS game jam kind of thing. And they have taken this, I think they backed it on Kickstarter, they funded it through Kickstarter, and they've built it out into a full game. And it's still, at least so far, very much hews to that initial proof of concept that they did, which is, this is a first-person shooter where time doesn't move, or more accurately, it moves very slowly until you move. So things stand very still. They're next to... you know, like frozen in the amber, right? Until you press W and walk forward, at which point the bullets move, the people start aiming, you start reloading everything, and looking around and moving causes things to move forward. But what it turns it into is, this is like a first person like Hotline Miami order of operations puzzle, where you have to really, really understand and commit to every single move that you're doing and figure out the order in which you're supposed to kill these enemies in these situations that the game presents to you. So like, if you've got somebody like ready to wail on you with a bat and somebody is about to shoot you with a gun, let's just use that as a simple example, you punch the guy with the bat. And then you have to hope that you can grab the bat from him before the person shoots his bullet, But even if he shoots it, you can step out of the way and then throw the bat at him, grab the gun from out of the air as he drops it because you hit him with a bat, and then shoot him and then shoot the first guy that you attacked who initially had the bat. And then the cool thing, and something that is incredibly, incredibly rewarding is, especially as the situations get more complex, is that after you complete it, it does this Meat Boy kind of thing where it shows you your perfect run.
Oh, that's awesome.
Right. So what it looks like is it's like a Jean-Claude Van Damme movie from first person where you are just like, you punch this dude, you grab the bat from out of his hands, you throw it at the guy, grab his gun, shoot the first one and shoot the second one, and then you're done. And so like it's very slow and deliberate and plotting and very much puzzle game like. This isn't a unique, nothing I'm saying about this game is unique, by the way. It's very puzzle game like. You know, in the execution, but in the final analysis, what you're actually doing is executing these very highly choreographed, improbable action sequences that it then shows to you.
So like a little, what's 5 seconds when they play it all together, what you just described, how long in terms of actually
like,
doing it?
Like 2 minutes.
Oh, so even when it's slowed down, it's not incredibly long.
Right, right. So this isn't a Dennis Fury situation where like I make a move and then I'm up and I'm pacing left and right, like, you know, just agonizing.
Yeah, because time moves forward when you pace left and right.
Yeah, that's right.
Exactly. Yeah. But yeah, so it's like 2 minutes, like the individual levels are super bite sized, but even over the course of like the, you know, like hour and a half probably that I've played of this game, it keeps on adding new kind of stuff, like either different things in the environment that you can throw or different weapons. Like it takes you from like stuff that is all like, alleyway ambushes with people with guns down to like you're in a pit fighting ring and you're like fighting off a bunch of guys, and then the arena opens up and you have to figure out your way out to taking out a guy in a bathroom and then going out into the bar and clearing them. Like it's a whole bunch of these like little disparate kind of scenarios that it expects you to work through, and each of them adds a different little gameplay wrinkle to it, and I'm not sure where the bottom of that's going to be.
Interesting.
It has a really cool visual style. It's very sparse. All of the enemy characters are like these featureless red, almost like poser kind of characters. You know, your arms are visible in the screen most of the time. The world is mostly white with like little black details, and all of the weapons you can interact with are black. So it's very stark. You know exactly what's going to happen. It's like the shooter version of the Mirror's Edge challenge levels.
Mm-hmm.
To an extent, but that doesn't like bother me, like that low level of detail. It makes it feel like stylized. And I just listened to an episode of Idle Weekend where they talked about it like as this super cyberpunk kind of thing, and that is kind of wrapped up in this meta plot. Like it seems like every game now has to have you interacting with a fake desktop, which it feels like kind of like concurrent evolution, but there's this idea that like you're hacking into this game to find the true version of it in a Pony Island her story kind of way. I'm not so much interested in that until it gives me something to really be interested in. I just know that there is a button that I can press that gives me more cool shit to do, and it makes me look like a fucking god when I do it. Yeah.
Neil. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is really cool. It's kind of costly for an indie game, which I guess is just a way of saying it's more than $10, therefore lazy dev, greedy dev. No, it's like $20 or $25 or something like that. I don't know how long it is. I really don't want to look up and see how long it is. I don't want to be able to anticipate when this experience is going to end. I really enjoy it. It's super great, and it's really conducive, Jala, like to the kind of play session that you described liking doing, like this really kind of like bite-sized kind of thing. Or I think, you mm-hmm. know, it's something that fits well into somebody's life who doesn't want to invest in a 2-3 hour session, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, I want to open up the floor. Like, did I do a good job explaining that? No, I'm just curious. Like, if you guys have heard about this, because like I heard about it a while ago, and I thought that it went the way of Spy Party, but no, it's like an actual thing, and it's really good. So, like, is there anything else you're curious about?
It looks like you're killing the guy from Etch-A-Chrome.
Oh, that PSN puzzle game?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it looks like you are trying to not get killed by an intelligent cube.
Yeah, so is this the kind of game that could lend itself to like player made levels or kind of weekly new challenges? Like how if you gave someone the tools, how easy do you think it would be to create new scenarios for you to try to figure out?
I don't know. Because all the ones that I've seen have been pretty tightly designed. They introduce new enemies at very specific points. Mm-hmm. And the geometry of a stage, the layout of the places that you're kind of like wandering around in definitely factors in to what it's asking you to do. So I couldn't say, but like a provisional yes, I could totally see people doing that specifically because of how sparse the visuals are. Like a user-made thing with a limited tool set would not feel too terribly out of place if it was designed well.
Very cool.
Yeah. So that cool. May be a way that they can extend value. Like, I don't know if that is a plan for like Steam Workshop kind of thing. Like, I haven't looked into it, but like it seems possible to me.
Yeah, cool. No, cool. This is like I said, I knew nothing about it, and then I just saw like red people and high scores. Interesting.
Yeah, I don't. Is there a scoring mechanism in it?
No, high scores is in high review scores.
Ah, okay, yeah. No, I was thinking like, wow, if it's scoring you, and I didn't even see that.
Yeah,
because like there's a game that I really like that came out in like the 360 generation. Have any of you played The Club?
No.
Nope.
Oh, yeah. I haven't played it. I know what you're talking about, though.
Yeah. But it's a game that was made by, I think it was like a, that's way too on the nose. I don't think it's the Midnight Club people. It might be the Project Gotham people. But it's like, consider if a racing game in Tony Hawk was mixed up with a shooter. Okay, so it's a third person shooter, and there, you know, like there are levels that are essentially like a loop, and it's scoring you like on style points as you go through and take out as many of the people as possible. There's like not really a campaign that I remember so much of anyway, like but it's like Burnout almost too, where you're just going through and trying to perfect your run and like get your combo up by executing these perfect action scenes. It feels very much, you know, if not like similar in pacing, because this is obviously so much more deliberate, but it feels of a kind in a way.
It's like Stunt Driver.
Yeah. Or Stuntman.
Yeah, that's one.
Yeah. No, this is great. I don't know how much more I'll have to say about it unless there's like a, unless there's a huge like time where it opens up beneath me and like, whoa, this became something totally different, but like I can totally see like investing in a stage or two every couple of days until I'm done with it.
Cool.
Yeah, so yeah, that's what I've been playing. Any other questions about those?
No.
Yeah, I'm not going to talk about Slashy Souls, and I do not intend to.
For lack of playing it, or for lack of having unique things
cold
to say about it?
Shoulder.
No, people are saying, hey, talk about it on Bonfire Side Chat. And it's like, there's nothing to say. It's a trifle. You guys want to button it up?
Buttons.
Let's
do so.
The credit. All right, thank you everybody for listening in. This is it's been a little bit of a longer episode. I'm not sure what it will edit down to, so I'm going to keep this admin section short. On a personal note, I want to direct your attention to both twitch.tv/duckfeedtv and also youtube.com/duckfeedtv, where you can find that Silent Hill playthrough that I did. I would really love to continue doing stuff like this. So the more activity and the more interest that I get in that, and the more people saying like, hey, you should do that, the likelier I am to come back with an Until Dawn or an Echo Knight or something like that. It'd be cool if I could fit this into a habit. But those are the places to go and find those. There's the usual stuff, duckfeed.tv/news, and the Patreon and the Facebook and all of that. But I think most of all, please tell friends about the show. That is a huge way that we can spread. We don't really advertise. And we are a general interest video game show that is mostly about video games. but that is a great way for you to help us out. Is there anything that I'm missing?
Keep being awesome.
Alrighty. So I've been Cole Ross, @Cole Ross on Twitter.
I've been Dennis Furia at DFuria on Twitter.
Always Jellichon in places.
Yeah. And, oh, Ben?
Merkelizer also in places.
And until next time, listen for a title. Does anybody have any they want to throw in?
Monair and Cold Shoulder.
Yeah, I've got Wiggity Rack, Monair, and Reverse Prison.
Dennis?
I just had Cold Shoulder.
There's Panzer Shrek, too.
I had written down early on, where is it? I got to pull up my notes. Drew Barrymore is a Pokemon, but that's kind of one that requires inflection and this kind of clunking.
Yeah.
Let's see here. You guys got most of mine. So I got Wiggity Rack, Covalent Mon, Mon Air, Reverse Prison, Balky Pix, and This One's Just Hell.
I like Mon Air a lot.
Well, the thing about all the Mons is we did the, you know, quarter to third Mons before. So, you know, like that's kind of related sounding anyway, even though it's totally different.
Hold on. I want to send an image.
Do it in the Slack if you can.
All right, never mind. I have it on my other computer, but it's a Nicolas Cage Jigglypuff hybrid. But if there's any way we can put Conair hair on it, then I think that would be golden.
Yeah, Jal is right, and that thought occurred to me with Monair. So that leaves I'm pretty fond of Panzer Shrek, but Cold Shoulder was the one that popped up the most.
Cold Shoulder.
Okay. Yeah,
Cold Shoulder it is.
All righty. Cool. Well, it is time for me to get my laundry out of the dryer and then go to bed.
All right.
Sounds like important business.
Yes. Yes. Great.
We'll sleep and launder well.
I will try. Thanks so much, everybody. I will talk to you soon.
All right.
Yeah. Peace.
Bye.
Night.
Night.